The following preview is of a graphic audio production rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
The aftermath of the nuke cost lasted too long for the survivors walled up inside the anthill stronghold.
Judgment will be judged! All dead!
Some escaped into madness and death. Others sought another way out.
Join me in stasis, then. When we're revived, things will be different. Things will be better. The world will be secure.
I can't. Not immediately. Maybe in a few months.
1.5 centuries later, the changes are great and horrible.
Dying.
Out of duty, service, and loyalty, I remained here. The few of us left behind died or went mad, and we were forced to kill them. The keystone of the new world order, the future of humanity, became nothing but a tomb, a crypt for those of us who existed in a twilight state between life and death. Duty, service, loyalty for the future. But you are here now, Mohandas, and we can share our own future. Make our own plans.
And what are your plans for me?
We will fly from this tomb into the sunlight again. We can be together from now on.
But some things never change.
Miss Bridget, I make this appeal to you in the hope you will urge your companions to render me aid. I realize none of you have any reason to care about what happens to me and my people, but what we've stumbled onto here will directly and tragically affect the lives of everyone in the world.
I don't trust him much more than you do. That's why we can't allow him access to the weapons that may still be stockpiled in the installation.
I have the weapon to wound the barons, overthrow the Vils, and inspire the people to rise and mutiny.
Isn't that what you wanted to do the last time? Your philosophy of destroying the majority in order to save the easily ruled minority?
I was attempting to access a complete inventory of the items stored here. I came across one word, which then led me to another file, and then to a monumental discovery.
Death from above.
Aurora, Mr. Kane. Aurora.
Death from all sides stalks Lakesh and the Cerberus warriors in Outlanders number 11, Armageddon Axis.
Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents James Axler's Deathlands. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Terrence Acil Ford, Nanette Savard, Ken Jackson, Colleen Delaney, Dolores King Williams, David Coyne, Tim Carlin, M.B. Van Dorn, Christopher Graybill, Michael Glenn, James Lewis, Kate Torrey, Dylan Lynch, and Mort Shelby. Deathlands number 45, Starfall.
Ryan Cotter rested his forefinger lightly against the Steyr rifle's trigger as he swept his gaze over the urban shockscape of the ravaged Ville. He hunkered in the late afternoon shadows over the smashed remains of what had once been a concrete and steel building in downtown Idaho Falls, Idaho, before a nuclear warhead had nearly blown the city out of existence 100 years earlier. He kept the bilious, green-tinged sunset behind him, an old gunfighter's trick and the first rule of a predator. His position also carried his scent away from the area he surveyed. The last bath he had taken lay nearly 4 days' hard travel behind him. He knew he carried a strong musk that an alert animal, mutey or man, could detect. The cold wind, full of the threat of the approaching winter, swirled around the big man, chilling him to the bone. Ryan gazed over his shoulder at the fire-haired woman hunkered down behind him.
We wait.
Maybe by the time we find whoever's screaming, it'll be too late.
Better late saving somebody than early to your own lynching.
The words sounded hollow even to Ryan's ears. Being intelligent about a play wasn't always easy. The saying had belonged to the traitor, the man who had finished Ryan's training in survivalism in Deathlands. In his day, the traitor had been a man strong enough, big enough, and violent enough to become a legend. His word had been his bond, and a law unto itself. He had saved individuals, and once or twice sent a whole community straight to hell for crossing him. The red-headed woman grimaced now and put a hand to her head. Her other hand held a .38 Smith & Wesson Model 640.
Getting hard to take, lover.
Christy Roth had a gift, inherited from and cultivated by her mother, and it hinged on mutey abilities that Ryan never even pretended to understand. But he did understand her pain and frustration, because he saw it etched into her beautiful face, saw the way she carried it in her movements. All the hard years of his own youth, all the carnage he'd seen and caused while traveling with the traitor and the war wags, hadn't completely dehumanized him. But it had hardened his sense of purpose. He was determined to live and to bring his small group through whatever waited ahead. Christy was hurting, but she wasn't going to die from it. Ryan scanned the terrain again. The shattered remains of the building they stood on gave him a vantage point almost 20 feet above the ground. If they had been in a forested area or the plains or mountains, the advantage would have been enough. The blasted remnants of the Ville proved to be another matter. Idaho Falls had been a small but thriving metropolitan area back before the new cost. Now, rusted hulks of cars, trucks, and buses lined what used to be streets. Acid rain had scoured most of the paint from the vehicles. Windows that had survived the end of the world had been claimed by the survivors. Looking out over the broken maze of streets and structures, Ryan was certain nothing remained that they could salvage themselves. But the companions had come to the city to trade with the survivors that still lived there, or to take what they needed any way they could. Supplies, especially when they traveled near rad-blasted areas and remnants of unrecovered Vills, remained a concern. And they intended to gather any information about the area they didn't already have. He glanced back at Christy, worrying about her. For some unknown reason, she had been hearing the screams inside her mind since early that morning after the Matrans jump that had brought them into the region, long before the noise had become a physical presence to the rest of the group.
Lot of bastard pain, Ryan.
You or the other?
Guy, I can't even tell anymore. Me, the other, it's all the same now. There's no separation.
Ryan looked at Christy, seeing the way her hand shook. He was a big man, tall and broad, carrying a lot of muscle in his back and shoulders. His curly black hair nearly reached his shoulders. His right eye shone a piercing cobalt blue. The place where his left eye should have been was covered by a scuffed black leather patch that kept infectious material out of the empty socket. A long scar trailed from the corner of his right eye to the corner of his mouth. He reached out and touched Christy's hand, and she looked at him, her eyes not quite focusing.
I'll be back.
Sorry, lover. I know it's all my fault. We shouldn't be taking on something like this.
No, it's not your fault. Just how things worked out, that's all.
Ryan released her hand and scrambled down the side of the rubble. He thought briefly of leaving the Styre with Christy, since she had the high ground and could cover him. But he also realized that in her present condition, he was better off keeping it. He dropped from the last chunk of concrete to the street level. A dozen broken-down wagons littered the street in front of him. One of them stuck out from the side of the building where it was partially buried under a pile of shattered masonry. All of the wagons had long since been stripped.